A month ago, you were flipping through your announcement insert in your bulletin before worship, and you saw that we were going to be reading and preaching from the book of Revelation. Huh, you thought to yourself. Isn't that the book with the dragons and the four horsemen and the beasts and all that? The book with all the doom and the end of the world? That ought to be interesting. So you came that first Sunday ready to hear about all that Hollywood-type dangerous stuff, and we told you that Revelation was a letter about dreams and hope and faith. Blah. On the way home, you said to your spouse, "Pastor Dan did a good job with that sermon, I guess. But I want to hear all that crazy stuff, the stuff they write novels about." You get a pat on the knee. "Patience, dear. I'm sure we'll get there." Then we spend 2 weeks talking about visions, not of dangerous stuff, but of a heavenly boardroom with lots of singing and a scroll written on both sides. Not even a little bit scary. Each week you echo your sentiment in the car on the way home. "I want to hear about the end of the world, darn it." Dan and Daniel are just skipping over that part, aren't they? They're chicken. "Patience, dear. I'm sure we'll get there." Well, we're there. The time you've been waiting for. The four horsemen of the apocalypse, bringing war and violence and famine and death. See, dear, I told you they weren't chicken. The slaughtered lamb, Jesus, opens the first seal on the scroll, and a voice calls forth the first horseman. You can see it on the cover of your bulletin if you look. It's not a great copy of it, but it's the one in the back, the one carrying the bow. It rides, we're told, to conquer. Foreign conquest seemed about as likely to those living in Rome as it does to us today in Colorado. Rome was in control. Rome was the most powerful nation around. And yet still there were borders and people on the other side of those borders who weren't too keen on Rome. It may have felt distant, sort of like how that horseman is furthest back in that illustration on your bulletin. But foreign conquest was and is still a threat. The second seal is opened and another horseman emerges. Second from the back in the illustration, this one carries a sword and takes peace from the earth that people might slaughter one another. The violence now has moved closer from the borders into the neighborhood. Crime, even just the threat of it, produces anxiety. Even among those who are used to that fabled peace in Rome, even among us with our police and security systems, if you felt the doom of the first horseman was far off, this one's getting closer to home. The third seal opens, and the third horseman comes carrying scales in his hands. Albrecht Dürer illustrates him as the largest of the four on your bulletin there, and perhaps for good reason. Alongside this horseman is a declaration, a quart of wheat for a day's pay. A day's pay? A day's pay for just one ingredient in your daily food. No money left over for housing, for healthcare, for Netflix even, or the rest of your food. The threat has moved right into the home now. It's a threat that a famine could hit, or a job could be lost, or an illness could come, and all of a sudden there isn't enough money in the bank to cover the expenses. You think you can handle it by cutting costs a bit, but maybe not. Maybe you end up getting behind on the mortgage, and then the car breaks down, and you wonder if you'll be looking up what the requirements are for IHN and where the food bank is. We're comfortable, you know, most of us. No threat of conquest, no immediate violence, maybe no threat of poverty. But the horsemen remind us, it could happen. It happens every day. For most of us, the odds are stacked in our favor, but we roll the dice every day. The fourth horseman is the feeblest in Dürer's piece, but also the closest to us, death. It can feel so far off, it can feel so far off for so many of us, and yet it comes for each of us. This vision forces us to confront something we'd rather leave behind, mortality. Foreign conquest, local violence, poverty, death, they threaten like a rider on a horse headed straight toward us. There's no date attached to the horseman, nor is there any specific event or situation that it mentions. The vision doesn't want us thinking these threats are specific and therefore maybe having nothing to do with us. No, the suffering represented by these three horsemen is possible for us all, and the suffering from the fourth will get us all. There's no need to look to the horizon or listen for a gallop during tomorrow's eclipse. It could happen any time. If that sounds terrifying, that's kind of the point. If it feels like the vision is telling you that the world very well could collapse all around us, that's kind of the point. As the fifth and sixth seals are opened, which wasn't part of our reading, the depth and breadth of the doom is only expanded until one of those in the vision, feeling crushed under the weight of this all, cries out, "Who is able to stand?" Which is a good question. We move through life, always hoping, always striving, maybe even assuming that we can stand up against whatever comes our way in this world. But with each open seal, with each horseman, we are reminded again and again, there are no guarantees. We are all potential and one day sufferers. So who can stand? It's a good question. A good enough one for there to be a pause in the crushing doom. Four angels appear in the vision to hold back the four winds on the earth, interrupting the destruction. And then another angel sent by God announces, "Do not damage the earth or the sea or the trees until we have marked the servants of God with a seal on their foreheads." Who can stand? "Hold on," an angel says. "I'll show you. It's those marked with God's seal." Here, God is sealing, God is marking those who can stand in the face of all that destruction. If the point of chapter 6 and the horsemen and the escalating images of doom is to dash any illusion we might have that we're exempt from the darkness of this world, then the point of chapter 7 and the sealing is to remind us that through God we are not consumed by the darkness, but yet have light. And we have to be careful here, though. On the one hand, you could read these words as a particular type of call to faith. A call to faith that involves browbeating yourself or someone else. You know, believe in God or else you might not get sealed. I don't think finger waving works very well, though. I don't think you can finger wave your way to faith. Rather, these are words of comfort, words of hope. Words which sustain faith when it can be really hard to sustain. When the world feels like it's crashing around you. When the reality of Revelation 6 and those horsemen smacks you right between the eyes in the bank or the doctor's office or sitting across the desk from your soon-to-be former boss. When you feel like you've been run over by one horse or another, these words remind you that you have not been beaten. God has marked you with the seal, claimed you as God's own, and will not let this calamity, no matter how calamitous, beat you down. As Paul says, we are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. It's the promise made in your baptism. When a cross of oil was marked on your forehead and you heard the pastor say, "You have been sealed by the Holy Spirit and marked with the cross of Christ forever." Sounds good. But what does that really mean? Like in life, you know? What does it mean to be sealed? Here again, we have to be careful. Careful to avoid wishful thinking. Obviously, being sealed doesn't mean the threats of chapter 6 don't affect us at all. We're still subject to the way the world crashes around us. Jesus even calls us to enter into it and take up our own crosses. To be sealed is not to be excused from the darkness of our world. So what does it mean? Well, I think that question actually points the way. Who can stand? Maybe that's what it means to be sealed. It means to stand. When horses ride and threaten not just our livelihood and our lives, but threaten who we are, sealed by God, we stand confident that we are still our most authentic selves, loved by God. When the sky falls around us and all pretensions of self-reliance are laid bare, we stand not on our own laurels or strength or wisdom, but we stand in the face of evil by the strength of the slaughtered lamb. And when suffering falls upon our neighbor, near or far, we don't run away, hoping to escape it ourselves for just a little longer, but we walk right up to the outcast student or into the hospital room or alongside the grief-stricken and stand with those who suffer, knowing that we don't stand alone. That's a good word. We already know we can't escape the darkness of this world. But if God can mark us so that we can stand, well, that's good news. You might even say that sealed by God, here we stand. We can do no other. I'd like to offer one final thought on this hope-filled conclusion to the doom of the horsemen, especially given the tenor in our country recently. A natural tendency is to push the good question a little further, you know? Who can stand? Those sealed. Well, then who are those who are sealed? John hears in the vision that the number sealed is 144,000 from Israel. The symbolic number likely signifies a completeness, you know, a sense that there is a certain select group God's got in mind, and God will be sure to seal every last one in that group. It's nice, a nice, complete feeling image, you know? Crisp. 144,000. That's what John hears. But like last week, he then looks and sees something completely different. A great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages. It's messy and it's diverse, and it's way more than 144,000. That's what God's kingdom looks like. That's what the gathering of those sealed looks like. And in a time in our country when the question of who is legitimate has resurfaced again, and when a tiny yet violent and vocal fraction of our nation proclaims that there are people superior simply because they're white, well, we do well to remember this expansive and diverse and beautiful vision of those whom God marks and seals as God's own. A great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and all peoples and all languages. As this chapter of Revelation closes, we're left standing in the midst of those sealed, those gathered round the throne, doing what they always do. So let's join them in what they always do. Let's sing. Amen.